Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
We're here to help you win your league and have bragging rights on your friends.
Let's go.
Now, here's Adam, Dave, and Jamie.
Hey, welcome to the show. Happy Friday, everybody. Let's get ready for the weekend. And actually, I asked the baseball guys this morning. I'll ask you. Are you excited for the start of baseball season?
No.
You know, if I were the baseball guys,
I didn't even know it was happening.
If I were the baseball guys, I'd be really pissed at you.
Why? What'd I do?
You're the host of the show, right?
Yeah.
You're supposed to know everything that's going on with the people on your show?
Yeah.
You didn't wish Scott White a happy birthday today?
Oh.
Look at you.
God. I can't believe he even reminded me yesterday.
They were really upset. They were really upset.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, anyway, let's talk
happy birthday, Scott White.
Let's talk football.
You just collapsed.
Fantasy,
like, literally,
baseball,
I felt bad.
Head in your hand.
Oh, birthdays mean a lot. Like, Dave doesn't like his birthday. Scott White loves his birthday.
Award-winning fantasy baseball columnist. One of the best people that you could follow for fantasy baseball advice in the industry.
At CBS
the
Scott White.
Leader of our fantasy baseball content here at CBSSports.com. And you failed to wish him a happy birthday?
All right, what is this? Like, yeah, get over it. I forgot to wish him a happy birthday.
My goodness,
let's move on. So Jamie is going to talk to us about the NFC today, including the word workhorse attached to a running back that is going into his third year. Figure out who it is before we tell you. We're going to talk about the Azer strategy, which is, you know, I'm still not quite sure exactly what it is. How to articulate it?
We've got some time to figure that out.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll read your emails at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Talk a little bit about dynasty rankings, but we will, of course, talk about those NFC storylines. So here is the Azer strategy. We talked about this when we looked at a mock draft. I drafted Devontae Adams and Randall Cobb, I think it was, in like rounds 3 and 8, something like that. Or maybe, and I know previously I drafted Keenan Allen and Tyrell Williams. Point is, take two wide receivers from the same team if you can get them far enough apart in your draft.
Stop there, because I don't think people understand that part of it.
Thank you. It's crucial.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I would
repeat that.
Because the point of it was that last year it was Cooper and Crabtree. And
you probably got in the
can't
same
do that this year.
3 and 8, right? 3 and 7, somewhere along those
lines. I think
lines.
I almost positive it was 8 for Crabtree.
Right.
And yeah, so it's probably 3 and 8. That's what I'm talking about. This year it would be 3 and 4, 3 and 5, or 2 and 4, 2 and 5, whatever. I couldn't do it with them.
Right.
So it's got to be spread out. But the point is, you sort of safety net yourself. Oh, Scott's coming in now.
Oh.
So I can wish him
well,
a
look
happy
who's
birthday.
Here.
Happy birthday,
hey,
everybody.
Happy birthday,
it's Scott White.
To you. We're making up for his mistake.
Hold on. Scott, welcome to the Fantasy Football Today podcast.
Oh, boy.
Thanks, Dave.
And happy birthday.
I'm sorry, Scott.
Oh, thank you very much.
Adam, is there anything you'd like to say to Scott?
Yeah, I said I'm sorry and happy birthday.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate it, Adam.
I knew it would be fine.
Scott, are you a little disturbed that he didn't mention that on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast? He didn't wish you a happy birthday on the podcast that you're regularly on?
Well, see, last year he didn't either, and I kind
2 years
of
in a row?
Brought it up myself, and then I was mocked relentlessly.
Yeah, you can't
so
bring it
I just
up
let
yourself.
It slide.
Thank you.
If you had to suggest a punishment, Scott, for Adam, for missing your birthday on the podcast 2 years in a row, a punishment that people on air could hear, what would it be?
I think he should, I don't know.
Yeah, no, there's nothing. There's nothing.
Right,
come on,
Dave.
Don't worry. You've got 30 minutes.
Think of something and come
Dave,
back.
Dave, can we get back to football here? So
during a certain toast, he's going to hear about this quite a bit.
So,
thank you, Scott.
Yeah,
happy birthday, buddy.
Happy birthday, Scott. If one wide receiver doesn't work out, the other one would, or, you know, something like that. Sort of insurance. It's almost like it's a little bit like handcuffing.
But let me ask you this question. And again, I think saying the word handcuff is also important. You didn't draft those two guys to be starters for your team last year, correct? Crabtree
no.
was probably your third guy.
I think he might have been my fourth.
Whatever. He was a backup wide receiver.
Yeah.
I think that's also part of this, is because I think when you first explained it about Cooper and Crabtree, I think people took it as you draft them to be starters for your team.
No.
They ended up being starters for your team.
Yeah.
But your idea going into it was not, I'm taking the Raiders receivers to start the Raiders receivers.
Exactly. So I think the advantage is, like, you draft a bench receiver and you say to yourself, well, when am I going to use him? And the answer would be, well, what if this guy gets hurt? All right, so now if this guy gets hurt, I have the guy that's going to benefit the most from that, right? If Devontae Adams gets hurt, Randall Cobb could actually end up being worth starting a lot. So that's sort of the point of the Azer strategy.
Isn't that handcuffing your receivers, though, which we have talked about in years past?
And I'm more in favor of handcuffing receivers than nobody seems to want to do it. Everybody, I don't handcuff receivers. I'm kind of into it.
Well, I think, again, we've talked about some specific examples where it can benefit you. You know, the Raiders last year, the Chargers this year, you know, with those two guys. You're not drafting, and again, I don't know if this is the way it ends up. You're not drafting Andre Holmes with the hope that if Sammy Watkins gets his, you know, foot injury again, that's the guy you're starting. But maybe you're drafting Mohamed Sanu or Taylor Gabriel in case Julio Jones goes down. These are guys we know with late-round picks. I would probably approach it more so that I would like to get somebody else who could be a significant contributor for their team. So, like, if you're looking at someone in round 8, let's just say that's the range of Tyrell Williams, I think he's probably
one of Williams is probably my favorite one in this conversation.
Yes, and I totally understand why. But and maybe this is to the Fitzgerald owner, but like J.J. Nelson, somebody that I have that they're back-to-back ranked, they're back-to-back in my rankings. I'd rather take a chance on J.J. Nelson. Maybe not more so than Tyrell Williams, but maybe more so than, let's say, like a Marquise Lee. Or, you know, if you drafted Allen Robinson.
Me ask you this. If you had Larry Fitzgerald but not Keenan Allen, then who would you take? Would you take J.J. Nelson or Tyrell Williams?
I think Tyrell Williams' ceiling is higher regardless, so I would take Tyrell Williams.
Tyrell Williams is sort of independent of this whole study. Like, right. He should probably be going higher.
Now you're basically saying that you just like Tyrell
Williams.
You want him on your team. I think the premise there's something going on with wide receivers where I feel like there's so many guys that are at that back end of – wide receiver 2 range all the way through the wide receiver 3 range that are all kind of the same. And that's how they finished last year. And I almost wonder if we're at a point where you can start streaming that second wide receiver, and maybe the strategy should be more about getting guys to pick from week to week to week and playing the matchup for that specific spot and doing that starting round 8 and later. And that way you open up the rest of your draft to pick up running backs, one wide receiver, maybe one tight end, maybe one quarterback with those first 7 picks.
I'd rather take the approach of finding that with my 3rd receiver. I still want to get 2 guys that I like.
So I'm looking for wide receivers that I can draft in the second half and potentially have as a number 2 wide receiver. Because I understand what Jamie's saying too about having 2 good wide receivers and then doing that with your 3rd and trying to stream the 3rd. Maybe I'm in a league where I don't have to stream a 3rd. Maybe I only need 2 wide receivers, and I want to.
Well, I'm not talking about streaming the 3rd as a 3rd guy. I'm talking about finding that to be a potential starter.
Okay, flex. So speculating on other receivers to be a number 1 or number 2
in that range that you're talking about, round 8 and later.
Well, I mean, that's what you're doing with every pick in round 8 or later, unless you're waiting for a quarterback or you're waiting for a tight end.
Right.
I'm not looking. You're going to be hard up if you're looking for starters in round 8. My approach was you can call it the Azer strategy.
Is that a poker term?
What?
Hard up?
No.
What does that mean?
If you're like in a tough spot.
Oh, okay. I never heard that. So what's your approach?
I'm looking for 2 receivers on the same team.
Yeah.
But I found a team that I want to invest in with 2 receivers that I can get after round 8 for both of them.
Oh, well, that'd be nice too.
So that's not necessarily the Azer strategy feels like that the Azer strategy is to go and get 1 wide receiver.
There's only one team like
that?
Those
first 5?
I think there's probably
there's a bunch, but there's one that I want to go after.
And that is?
Baltimore. Rashad Perryman and Mike Wallace. I think between one of them, the same premise. One of those two will be fine. I don't know which one.
It's also they're going to draft somebody too.
Well, then it changes.
The Jets could be interesting because
Decker and Anunua?
Decker or and Anderson could be one of the two. You know, whoever ends up being the primary number 2 guy. There's also Minnesota. You know, those 2 guys are going to get drafted in that range. So I think you could see, you know, Diggs has shown some flashes. This is his 3rd year. Thielen obviously came on at the end of last season. Mm-hmm. Those are 2 guys if you want to try and, you know, play the who's the better of the 2. You know, they'll be in that range also.
All right. So let me read some listener responses to this because we did get some pretty good feedback on it. This one's from Michael. It says, "Dear Quentin, Marquise, and Michael." Yeah, I don't know. "I'd like to say that I hope every team in my fantasy league attempts to follow the Azer strategy because it stinks. Adam, you said you're not looking for 2 mediocre receivers, but the goal of this groundbreaking strategy of yours is to select 2 receivers from the same team with the expectation that one of them will overachieve each week." No, not really. "The other one presumably will not. Balance that out, and you know what you've got? 2 mediocre receivers."
I do think this is kind of the way you explained it the first time, though.
I might not have explained it well.
You were using the Raiders as an example, and you said, "I'm starting Cooper and Crabtree, so I know if one's bad, the other one's good." That's the way you framed it. And so at least I'm getting quality production from one of them.
At the end of the day, though, they were both top 12 or top 13 wide receivers.
But not together week to week.
No, and I was sort of forced to start both of them at the same time. Like, I wanted to bench Cooper. Like, Cooper just stunk down the stretch.
Yeah, but you couldn't bring yourself to do it, could you?
I don't remember.
I don't think anybody could.
It's funny. Like, we're arguing about this team, and you ended up winning. You beat me by a point in the championship game.
The greatest win ever.
Yeah, great.
I guess what I would say is that, yeah, there's a risk, right? Let's take Devontae Adams and Randall Cobb. Most likely scenario is probably that Adams stays healthy, does fine. I cut Cobb. But there's a risk that they both are just okay, right?
Don't you feel like they played different roles in that offense?
Yeah, but I feel like we saw Cobb, the only time he was good last year, off the top of my head, I feel like...
It was early.
No, it was late because we were playing him in DFS late. Jordy got hurt in the playoffs, but did he miss a game? He didn't miss a game.
Randall was
good. Cobb tore it up against the Giants in the second half, if I remember correctly. Or Adams did? God, I don't remember a lot of good games for Cobb last year. Here's what happened. Cobb
was good.
No, he was good for three games last year.
Early in the season, and then Jared Cook got healthy, and then Cobb took really a backseat. It really had nothing to do with Adams, to be honest with you. It was really more Jared Cook playing. Here was your team, if you're interested.
Yeah, go ahead.
In the championship game where we played each other. You had Kirk Cousins, Rob Kelly, and Frank Gore. And
Kirk
your receivers.
Cousins, yeah, by the way, Kirk Cousins, Rob Kelly, whatever, receivers.
Jordy Nelson. Mm-hmm. Michael Crabtree, and Cooper was your flex. This is a PPR league.
Okay.
Now, on your bench, you had only one other wide receiver, mm-hmm. and it was Dante Moncrief.
Okay. So I was starting both of them. By the way, so this is what I'm talking about. Randall Cobb, five catches, 116 yards, and three touchdowns against the Giants when Jordy Nelson got hurt. So I do think if Nelson or Adams goes down, we start looking at Randall Cobb. And we were thinking about using...
Wait a minute. Cobb had three touchdowns against the Giants?
Yeah, they won 38-13.
When was this?
In the playoffs.
Oh, fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, but you know, you're saying that. Didn't we have a year of this without Jordy Nelson?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess you could say he's playing second fiddle to Adams at that point, whereas he was the number one guy when Jordy Nelson got hurt, when Jordy Nelson tore his ACL in 2015.
I don't know.
I don't want to quibble over it.
I understand your point, and this could take us into one of our news items about the New Orleans Saints. So you're talking about trying to find somebody on a good passing team like you had with the Raiders where Crabtree was the number two option behind Cooper, like we're talking about with the Chargers because Keenan Allen's been proven when he's healthy, and Tyrell Williams proved himself last year when Allen was out. So, yes, you could look at Randall Cobb and say he gets elevated if one of the two guys behind him aren't there because – it's a great passing attack. But also think about last year. What happened when Dante Moncrief hurt his shoulder? Andrew Luck is a great quarterback. Did anybody really step up to a certain level that was fantastic? We had some good moments from Jack Doyle. Philip Dorsett.
What if T.Y. Hilton had got hurt? You don't think Moncrief would have had big numbers?
I think his numbers would have been better. I mean, so touchdown dependent.
He would have had more targets for sure.
All right, so last year I drafted DeAndre Hopkins, fourth overall in a league. And I took Tyler Boyd over Will Fuller, and I was so mad at myself. In that situation, that's the Acer strategy. That was later in the draft.
That's handcuffing your number one receiver.
Yeah, but it's also like it's not one of the reasons why Hopkins wasn't doing great at the beginning of the year is because Fuller actually was.
Fuller had some big catches. That's it. It's not like Phil Fuller was.
But that's another good example.
Stealing targets away.
Of Tyler Boyd. We did see Brandon LaFell have a couple good moments when A.J. Green had the hamstring injury.
Yeah.
So in theory, it's just the same as handcuffing your running backs. It's just I think the difference is, you know, with the running back that's next up, they're guaranteed the touches. Those receivers aren't guaranteed the targets
unless they're good. And you're not going to know that until they're in that position.
Here's another example of how it worked, and you could argue was he was a good player, was he a great fantasy player? Allen Hurns had 10 touchdowns 2 years ago. He gets hurt very early in the season. Marquise Lee comes in and he played very well. Targets went up. Numbers were up. He wasn't a startable fantasy receiver. You could argue that was Bortles' fault. That was just hit. That's maybe his ceiling fantasy-wise. He's not a red zone guy like Hurns was. But he didn't become a starting fantasy receiver for you. And he was next guy up.
I think there were some weeks, though, where you might have been excited to try him.
Yes,
he never made it consistent.
But next man up, though, when you're becoming the number two, is not quite the same. Now, I know I'm using the Randall Cobb example, but that is the Packers. But, like, next man up hopefully would be a guy who would be the number one, not the number two.
Well, then that should have been Devontae Adams 2 years ago when Jordy Nelson
got hurt. Okay, same scenario. Dez Bryant last year. So forget
they
about
all, they all suck though. Huh? They all suck.
But again,
and that's the point.
I know.
Adam,
I know.
A lot of these guys, just
but a lot of them,
great.
A lot of them are good. I mean, all right. I think we're kind of going around.
How
in
many? How many receivers can you look at from last year and say, all right, I didn't know anything about them at the beginning of the year, but when they got an opportunity to play, I came away impressed. How many receivers? Can you get,
Tyrell Williams
five?
Is one.
That's the number one.
Jamison Crowder is two.
Okay.
J.J. Nelson at the end of the season when Floyd was cut.
J.J. Nelson, I mean, can I say Davante Adams? Because what we knew about him was that he wasn't
sure.
Good.
Sure.
I bet I could think of someone else. Michael Thomas, no rookies, right?
I wouldn't. I would
right,
say
that's not really in the spirit of it, I guess.
I mean, you could say, in essence, Terrell Pryor.
Definitely say Terrell Pryor.
You could say it with Rashard Matthews. So
we're
going to
talk about the Redskins.
Now, here's another example. Another thing we're going to talk about, too, is Kelvin Benjamin gets hurt in training camp. Nobody thought Ted Ginn was going to be good. You were never starting Ted Ginn, but at the end of the season, Ted Ginn's numbers were decent. He was a top 25 receiver.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm working on it. I'm trying to finalize the Azer strategy, what exactly it is. Is it just handcuffing? Because that doesn't – I can't really coin that.
No.
You know, that's not a thing. That's been around.
Yeah.
I got to try to invent something new. I had another email
from
Paul.
You don't like the idea of two guys from Baltimore?
No, I don't. I don't think they're going to have a good enough passing offense.
I think they're going to have to throw a ton.
They threw more than any team in football last year. They were amongst
Mike
the leaders.
Mike Wallace had over 1,000
yards.
He wasn't great for fantasy, but he had over 1,000
yeah,
yards.
I
think
I need to see
it could be interesting in the same light and – there were good moments for one if he's healthy, is the Bears. Because Cameron Meredith played really well down the stretch.
Who's the other receiver?
It's Kevin White. Because the upside is clearly there. He just has to stay healthy. And we saw it in
yeah,
a small
cool.
sport
yeah.
last year.
I like the Richard strategy. It's fun.
The one thing about the Bears is I think they're going to be able to run the ball very well.
I don't
disagree
with that,
they
but that doesn't necessarily mean they're bad fantasy
game.
Options.
Right.
And Woodhead could take away from any receiver.
But that's interesting, though. Like, if you're just taking late-round flyers on wide receivers.
Why not pair up?
Pair up
two,
you'll
team.
Cut one. That's fine. You see how it plays out.
You might
out.
Cut both.
You might
you
cut both.
And you shouldn't give a damn
sure.
because it's a late-round pick.
You exactly. can take the two other guys not named Jarvis Landry in Miami and see if Parker stills, you know, materializes.
That's not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really not a bad idea.
I got to apologize to Paul, who wrote about the Azer strategy. It was pro-Azer strategy. But we spent 20 minutes on it. So let's do our email of the day. It's from, it's from Ken in St. Paul, Minnesota, 55102. That's new, zip code. Dear
really?
Brandon, Marvin, and Reggie. Colts?
Colts in 2004 when Peyton
all
had
three the... of them finished as top 12 fantasy receivers.
Ah. Brandon Cooks to the Patriots seems like it could be a real game changer. Now I'm reading this email from Ken because it's different than what you guys think about Brandon Cooks' value.
Can you read it in a Minnesota accent?
Oh, Brandon Cooks of the Patriots, eh? Could be a real game changer, making him a potential top five. Now he's Irish. Top five.
He's an Irish Canadian.
Top five wide receiver, eh? Do they say eh? They do.
Canadians definitely
Minnesota,
do.
They do, right?
I'm sure there's people in Minnesota.
I mean, you've managed to insult another state. Good
basically, enough. He go. You know, I'm a Vikings fan. Basically, he goes from a team with a superb
yeah, they were good until you started rooting for them.
Where that is true. Where the number one wide receiver never got a ton of looks to a team with a superb quarterback who rarely throws to any one wide receiver. But New England has had a bunch of scrubs at receiver for years and invested very little in them. Trading a first and third rounder for Cooks suggests they plan to treat Cooks quite differently as a big play threat and a featured part of the offense. I see 1,400 yards and 12 touchdowns in 2017 for Brandon Cooks. Do you?
I'll take the under. The last time they had a number one fantasy receiver was 2012. It was Wes Welker. So could he be a number two guy? Yeah.
Really? Edelman was never a number one?
No, he had a lot of injuries, you know, so he hasn't really put together a 16-game season. Now, if you want to take his numbers over the course of time that he played,
right.
you know, there's probably a chance you could stay that. And certainly PPR, he's been a number one guy. But in standard scoring leagues, they haven't had a number one guy since Welker. And the last time that they went out and made this much of an investment in somebody, you can argue, was Randy Moss, you know, when they traded to get him.
Outside receiver type.
Right. But you're looking at it. Brady has never had as many weapons as he has when he's going to step on the field for this year, assuming everybody's healthy. It just they are as loaded as they've ever been, if Gronk is healthy and with everybody else there with him. So however they attack people, he's going to have Edelman on the field almost all the time. He's going to have Cooks on the field almost all the time. He's going to have Gronk on the field almost all the time. And then they'll mix and match with Dwayne Allen as a second tight end, with Malcolm Mitchell or Chris Hogan on the other side, on the outside. The running backs, all three running backs catch the ball. Burkhead, Lewis, and White. They're all capable weapons.
Brady's arm is going to fall off.
It might. Or somebody may
steal it. He's going to complete 70% of his passes, and then
somebody may steal it.
A reporter steals his arm.
I think the thing about it is Edelman averaged, and you brought this up, Adam, which was a great point. His targets went up after Gronk went out, but he averaged over the course of the season 9.9 targets a game. Cooks, I think his high was like 8.1 during his tenure with the Saints. I don't see him getting 8 targets a game with this receiving core being as it is. Because if that's the case, then you should stay as far away from Edelman as you could possibly get, and as far away from Gronk as you could possibly get, because their numbers aren't going to be close to what you're expecting.
I guess the best case is that the two players that he's competing with most for targets are both very injury prone, in Gronk and Edelman.
Well, then that changes the entire tenor of it. But
yeah, it does. But it's I don't know. I mean, 1,400 yards and 12 touchdowns, that's probably top 3 receiver. That's hard to imagine.
No. It seems unlikely. I'm looking at what Randy Moss did his first 3 years there in New England. But it's not fair because Gronk wasn't there.
And Brady was 10 years younger.
Yeah. But I think that's what they're trying to go for, major threat on the outside.
Do you think Cooks is a downfield threat? I know he can get big plays, but I feel like they're usually shorter passes than he takes to the house.
No, I think he's not an 80-yard threat.
He's not Moss, that's
right,
for sure.
Making plays in the air.
You don't think he can make a catch bombs?
I think most
can
people
he?
Can.
Of course he can. Is he going to do it consistently like Moss did? We scored 20-plus touchdowns?
Well, of course. I don't think anybody's expecting
that. No, it's a different offense. Like,
right.
They don't do that.
But I don't think they brought him in because they see the same skill set as Julian Edelman.
No, but they don't see the same skill set as Randy Moss.
No, but he's definitely closer to Moss than he is to Edelman. And as far as being that outside.
I would say he's closer to Edelman. He's a much more explosive version of Edelman, but he's closer to Edelman because he can play inside.
I don't think he can run
Moss
routes
can never
like
play
Edelman
inside.
Can.
Huh?
I don't think he can run routes like Edelman can. Edelman's one of the best route runners in the game.
Right, but Cooks can play inside and outside. Randy Moss never played inside.
He
Randy
could have. They just chose not to.
Why would you? You're taking away the biggest threat of the maybe in NFL history.
And that's part of the thing with Moss is that he had size, which made him all the more attractive on the outside, and Cooks doesn't have that. So if you're looking at them – height-wise, yes, of course. In that regard, he's a lot like Julian.
He's never played in the cold consistently.
And that's the other thing. The outdoors thing cannot be overstated.
And the outdoors, in terms of his touchdowns, it's half, in terms of how he produces. So I think if Cooks falls to a good spot in the draft, you're going to be thrilled to take him. I wouldn't touch him before round 5, personally, but that's never going to happen.
You're right. Someone will take him before that. And don't make what I'm saying is me stumping for Brandon Cooks. I'm not going to
I get it.
Train.
I mean, look.
But I think I see what the Patriots are trying to do. They're trying to
They're getting more speed. It's great.
Yeah. And it's going to make them harder to cover underneath.
Who would you guys prefer, Sammy Watkins or Cooks?
Watkins.
I think I actually have Cooks ranked higher.
Yeah. Well, we know from yesterday, Dave is lower on Watkins than Jamie is. All right, great. So thank you for the email. Good conversation. We appreciate it, Ken, in 55102.
So we're talking NFC, and I don't want to jump ahead of you, but just it ties in. So Sean Payton talking about how they're going to replace Cooks. I think we alluded to this a little bit yesterday, just sort of Ted Ginn, and the role that he has for him. He says he's going to be a flanker. I see a lot of plays down the field. He said he's always been the fastest guy in the field. And I thought one thing, which was, honest of him to say this, which I always appreciate, he's like, I've said this about Ted Ginn to Ted Ginn. The first half of his career was bad. The second half of his career has been good. And he's somebody that's generally viewed as a draft bust where the Dolphins took him. But he's been good in Carolina. And not, the hope is that he's good again. So those 8 games when he's indoors, certainly
it's
daily
more
leagues,
than that. I think it's 10.
Huh?
10 games.
8 games at home, especially with any primetime games that they end up getting.
Yeah.
It keeps Drew Brees relevant. And then it's how do they also replace Brandon Cooks? And I think this is where Kobe Fleener maybe gets a bump. And Willie Snead as well. Snead is somebody I think that if the touchdowns go up a little bit, because he's been 900 to 1,000 yards each of the last 2 years, if those touchdowns can get to 6, last year Tyrell Williams, we're raving about Tyrell Williams, was the number 13 fantasy receiver in standard leagues. He had 1,007.
Wow.
So Willie Snead, if he just gets that little bit of a bump,
wasn't a great year for receivers.
No, right? But
still, 1,007 is a good year.
The investment that you're making in Willie Snead in the offense that he plays in, we're talking about what happens to Cobb if Adams goes out? Drew Brees is not going to stop throwing.
I couldn't stand Willie Snead last year. Like, it was always the Monday show. It was me versus Chris and Heath, arguing about Willie Snead. And I was always anti-Snead. But I'm not anymore. Like, this makes total sense, It's not that I think Snead is bad. It's just
no. I'm looking forward to I'm going to see him next week. And
Kreith or Snead?
I see Kreith every day. But I'm going to see Willie Snead next week at Anquan Boldin's charity event, if assuming he shows up as expected. And He was excited about his opportunity last year after the rookie year he had. He's just got to be through the roof now, you know, just how big of a chance. And you know, Sean Payton talked about this. And let's not discount how good Michael Thomas is, obviously, when we're talking about this.
Am I weird for wanting Ted Ginn with a late round pick?
No, I totally agree. I think I either put him as a sleeper in the column that I wrote as a guy to keep an eye out for that I'll write about again later.
He's another good late round pick.
Oh, absolutely. Richard Strategy, Snead and Ginn.
I don't know how excited – I would be more excited for Snead in a PPR.
Okay.
I don't know if he's going to be this guy that you guys are –
Well, what was his high in touchdowns over the last 2 years?
Like three. Three or four?
I don't disagree with you, but I
– I got it.
But I'm telling you is if he goes to six with what he's been doing –
1,006.
That puts him in the top 25 to 30 range.
Where he had three scores last – 2 years ago, four last year, and he –
Okay, so
984 is a rookie and 895.
Keep the trend going.
Year.
2, 4, 6. I mean, if that happens.
Well, no, the trend is 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, he said it was 3. 3, then 4.
Right.
Oh,
he
I'm sorry.
He had 3 as a rookie, 4 in his second.
With your pattern, you're actually disappointed that he scored 3 instead
of
2.
Yeah. But his yardage went down. Targets and catches.
Yeah, well, he also
up.
Got hurt. And Michael Thomas being there certainly impacted him.
So Drew Brees, by the way, says
he's making me want Brees.
He wants to play until he's 45. And that reminds me. You want to hear about Drew Brees? Why don't you hear from Drew Brees? Listen to the Roughing the Passer podcast. The first 50 minutes are Will Brinson and Ryan Wilson just talking football, talking Vegas, rule changes, stuff like that. It's good stuff. The last 10 minutes, Drew Brees joins the show. So they got Drew Brees. That's pretty cool. I just published that podcast a couple hours ago. So Roughing the Passer podcast. Dynasty rankings. When you see that Brady and Brees want to play until their mid-40s, do you take Jameis Winston or do you take Tom Brady and Drew Brees if you're starting a dynasty league right now?
We had this question a couple weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, was an email.
Oh, I think you're right.
I think if your roster is built to win now, you're taking Brady. But I guess you're doing startup, so why would you
feel like they could still be good in 3 or 4 years, Brady and Brees?
The history tells us no, because Favre fell off a cliff. I covered Dan Marino's last year. It was terrible. Peyton, you saw what happened. You know, body breaks down. You know, we talk about running backs in their 30s because that's what happens for them. Quarterbacks, as they approach 40, and you have two guys that are in their, you know, Brady is 40, Brees is in his late 30s, Rivers is 35, Eli is 36.
But we're in an era now where they protect quarterbacks more than they certainly did in Marino's day.
Of course.
And Brady has already defied history because going into this year, weren't we saying, like, no quarterback's ever been good at this age? And he would have probably won the MVP if he had missed 4 games.
I think something that will be telling to a very minor degree will be if, in fact, the Patriots do keep Jimmy Garoppolo when we get past the NFL draft.
Yeah.
Because that will tell you how they feel. And if they feel that way,
then why shouldn't we?
Fantasy owners should feel that way.
Right.
By the way, Mike Tomlin saying he expects Sammy Coates to make another leap this year.
Yeah, there's like a question or two before, if you look at the transcript, where I just asked him about Antonio Brown for this wide receiver story that I'm doing. And I also asked him about Ladarius Green in that same context. That to me felt a little bit like coach speak.
Well, plus, like, how's he going to do that if Martavis Bryant is real?
That's the biggest thing.
But I will give you a cool stat because Coates actually, weeks 1 through 5, played very well. And then he got hurt and the season went down.
The person who asked him that question basically led into it with that. Could you expect Sammy Coates early, or what we saw from Sammy Coates after the finger injury?
And I'll give you the stat. I mean, this is a worthless stat, but it just for fun. He scored 51 fantasy points, Sammy Coates. 51 fantasy points on 31 targets in his first 5 games. That's 1.65 fantasy points per target. Antonio Brown, for the season, scored 1.25 fantasy points per target. So, look, a lot of that was like a 25-point game he had. I don't remember who was against, but bottom line is Coates, for the amount of work he got. And actually, we saw the same thing for Martavis Bryant because they both scored touchdowns, right? Like a lot of points per target and really good production. But yeah, I mean, it's crowded field there.
Crowded house.
Free food alert, people. Yeah, exactly. Look, I'm here in South Florida hanging out with my buddies, seeing family.
Oh, we're buddies? Friends.
Yeah, we're buddies.
How come, speaking of food, why didn't you come out to lunch today?
Because I was busy today.
Oh.
I had to edit the Roughing the Passer podcast.
How convenient. You come and grace us with your presence 3 times a year, and when you come, you don't even have lunch.
I had lunch, just not with you. So there are two things that I miss in New York right now.
Zoe and?
Allie. There are 3 things.
The Nintendo.
Okay, there are 4 things I miss. The other thing is Blue Apron.
Wow.
I've been talking about...
Rank those 3 things. Zoe... Allie and
Nintendo. Allie, Zoe, Nintendo.
Wow, you think about it.
Yeah, just the second and third ones. But seriously, you know, I've been saying, are you cooking? You know, make the Blue Apron, whatever. So I love it. I've been enjoying cooking, and I love the food. It's the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country for a reason. If you like to cook, which I didn't before I started this almost a year ago now, and now I love it. If you like to cook, it's a no-brainer. Get on Blue Apron. If you like food, Dave.
I do.
People should try Blue Apron. We can give you some free food. BlueApron.com/fantasyfootball. BlueApron.com/fantasyfootball. Get three free meals. Here's what I'm getting next week. Fontina stuffed pork chops, chicken with roasted vegetables, and a spinach and fresh mozzarella pizza. And the pizzas are the best. I love the pizzas. They're my favorite.
You're kidding.
No, I swear.
Really?
They're the best. They're like the dough is just... It's just very fresh. It's awesome. This is my favorite thing that I get from Blue Apron.
I'm gonna have to try this.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's really good.
For real?
No, I'm serious. You're going to love it. So,
okay.
BlueApron.com/fantasyfootball. Three free meals, free shipping. BlueApron.com/fantasyfootball. A better way to cook. Well, just like we did with the AFC yesterday, we buried the NFC a little bit. So, Jamie,
I'm thinking pizza now.
It's so good.
I love mozzarella on pizza, and I hate it when it's delivery.
You do? As opposed to Blue Apron.
He's making fun of your spelling.
Oh, okay. I get it. Yeah, very funny. So I am a terrible speller, and I butchered mozzarella.
And delivery.
Well, that was just a typo. Mozzarella, I legitimately had no idea how to spell.
All right. NFC.
Jay Gruden thinks the Washington receiving core is going to be fine. Here's what they're replacing from last year. 135 catches, 2,046 yards, and 7 touchdowns on 216 targets. It's a lot. From Pierre Garçon to DeSean Jackson.
That would have been a good tandem to draft last year.
Also, Jordan Reed only played 12 games last year. They got Terrell Pryor.
And Sean McVay.
And they're losing Sean McVay, you're right. They got Terrell Pryor, though, and Jay Gruden optimistic about the passing game. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. It's funny because you think about how loaded they were a year ago. You know, you alluded to this with the receivers that surprised us. Jameson Crowder had just shy of 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns.
He was the number 31 wide receiver. He had 847 and 7.
I'm sorry, just shy of 900 yards, excuse me.
Yeah.
92 targets. He's clearly going to be over 100 targets this year. And has a chance to be a 1,000-yard guy. I think the touchdowns probably drop a smidge, but he's somebody that is one of my favorite breakouts for the season, also entering his third year.
And when he struggled, it was really when DeSean Jackson took off last four games of the year.
You have Doxson, who didn't play, was top 20, I believe, 22 overall pick in the NFL draft a year ago from TCU, and he only played 2 games because of his Achilles. And then you have a guy who's another breakout candidate, because I think he's going to be better, is Terrell Pryor, who almost identically, outside of the yards per catch, matched DeSean Jackson. Sorry, belly. 1,000-yard receiver and 4 touchdowns.
This isn't the best show for you, Adam, I got to say.
The difference between their fantasy production was Pryor's quarterback play when he had, you know, some snaps under center in Cleveland. So, I mean, this is a situation. To me, Kirk Cousins doesn't really lose very much from a fantasy standpoint. I don't think he's going to be a top 5 quarterback, but I think he's still top 10-ish. So he's somebody that you settle for and you're very happy about. So there's a very good passing attack going on here that is going to lose some guys, but they replace them with potentially a little bit better situation.
All right, let's rank 3 receivers. Let's rank DeSean Jackson, Terrell Pryor, and Jamison Crowder. Dave, you want to start? DeSean Jackson, yeah. Terrell Pryor, and Jamison Crowder.
Pryor's my number one. Pryor's my number one. Jackson would be 2. And then
Crowder.
Crowder would be 3.
Yeah, I just flip-flop Crowder and Jackson.
Jackson's 3rd for you, huh?
Yeah, I think he takes a big step back in Tampa.
Interesting.
Really excited about Crowder.
Let's talk about some running backs. Mike McCarthy said that Ty Montgomery has to show he can handle a full workload. Montgomery is now entering his third season, but he averaged 5.9 yards per carry. He also caught 44 passes. We know his role changed halfway through the year. Only one game with more than 9 carries. This was his best game. 16 carries, 162 yards, and 2 touchdowns at the Bears. Great game for him. So do you guys think Montgomery is going to get that workload?
I think this comes down to who they add. You know, so McCarthy made it very clear. We only have 2 healthy running backs on our roster right now. You know, so they brought back Christian Michael. He's not going to be the starter. Montgomery would have that role over him. They are rumored to be in the Adrian Peterson mix. There was a report, an ESPN report, that he was going to take a visit there, and then they canceled the visit. McCarthy sort of addressed that a little bit. He said, we're not going to get into specifics, but he is somebody that, you know, considering the rivalry, we know him very well, blah, blah, blah. That, to me, wherever Adrian Peterson goes, I want the backup. It's like last year. I'll take Jarrett McKinnon. I'll take Ty Montgomery. I'll take Paul Perkins if it's the Giants. I'll be happy about that. Let Peterson go out and, you know, hopefully he's healthy, but it's hard for a guy at 32 years old switching teams, coming off playing three games. You know how that works. So I think Montgomery right now is probably, I think consensus among the three of us, if I looked when I wrote the story, was in the 20s. Probably ended up being too high once we factor in the rookies and then whoever else they add. But I think he's still going to be a very good PPR running back and certainly somebody that can have a 4 to 5 game stretch of good to great fantasy production. Because one thing McCarthy did say, I'm sorry, Dave, he did say, I don't want a specialist.
Yeah.
I want a 3-down back. And the quote that he said was, it messes with your flow and we don't want any hiccups in our flow.
And I think that's what crushes Ty Montgomery, because I don't think he can hang as a 3-down running back. I think he in a pinch, he did last year.
Right, but like I said, only one game with more than
nine
carries.
Unless he really made some serious changes.
They also didn't run the ball really at all.
It's a shame, because I think he's good. I just, like, I don't know if
I think he's good at what he does. I don't think he's good if you ask him to do what your typical three-down running back does.
Well, is he going to be 20 carries? No. Is he going to probably
then
max out?
Play.
Is he going to max out? Well, he played a lot last year.
He had one game with over 10 carries?
Yes, but that doesn't account for the time he was on the field. And so you're still talking about the best quarterback in the NFL. Sorry, I need Tom Brady or Drew Brees or Matt Ryan, apologist, but Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in the NFL. And he's going to have a full offseason to be in that role. He's going to have a full offseason to change his body to be.
I got
to
have the Packers prove it to me.
Obviously.
We can revisit this after the draft.
100%. Totally agree. Or after free agency, you know, if they do sign somebody like Peterson. But he, you know, again, we talk metrics. So Eddie Lacy, before he got hurt, over 5 yards a carry. Among the league leaders, when you talk about at least 70 carries from among running backs for yards after contact, you know what was the best with over 70 carries? Ty Montgomery.
You know why? Because he had two huge carries against Chicago.
Doesn't matter.
Where they bumped into him at the line of scrimmage, and then he took off.
He was at over 5 yards a carry, yards per contact. You know who the second best guy was? Jalen Richard at 3.8 or whatever it is. So he's probably closer to that, but that's still among the league leaders. So you take away the two big runs, because Richard had big runs, Eddie Lacy had big runs.
I wonder how much what his average would be if we took away those two big runs.
I'm sure it's still probably high because of the team that he played on. If Lacy was at that level, and if Montgomery's at that level, it goes to show you that
he's
know how
good.
To get guys in space.
He's good. It's just whether or not he can have enough carries to matter.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
We'll see. We'll see what it'll be telling what they do in the draft. Now, speaking of Eddie Lacy, what did Pete Carroll have to say about Eddie Lacy?
He was, you know, I asked him, you know, can you get him back to the level he was 2 years ago? And the first thing he brought up was he averaged 5 yards a carry when he was healthy on the field last year. And if you look at Eddie Lacy's numbers.
He said yards per carry?
Yep.
Because I'm getting a lot of heat. Like, there just happened to be one person giving me flack for talking about DeMarco Murray's yards per carry. But it happens throughout the year where people are like, you guys, stop talking about yards per carry. It's like, I get that it's not the be-all, end-all, but what else am I supposed to use? We don't have advanced metrics in football like we have in baseball.
Well, that's why I'm starting to rely a lot more on yards after contact. Because it's showing you guys that are doing things after they're getting hit. And
I just always wonder, like, you know, if a guy gets a fingertip on someone in the backfield, is that yards? Like, what is the threshold
for
yards after
contact? Well, if it's a fingertip, probably not. But if it does something where there's contact, beyond a fingertip, a shoulder, a tackle attempt, like, then yeah.
Really do feel like yards per carry is a pretty good stat.
I really do.
Like, let's
and
not,
I think
let's
yards after contact
it.
Is a good stat too. But anything where there's an average, where it's spread out over 50, 70, 100, 200 times, there's going to be anomalies in there.
Yeah.
Do you know what Isaiah Crowell's rushing average was last year? It was 4.8. I didn't give you a chance to answer. I'm sorry. What was Isaiah Crowell's rushing average if you take away his 85-yard run week two against the Ravens?
4.4.
Still
right, but,
good,
but again,
0.4 of a point.
Again, you want guys that are going to make those plays.
Yeah.
So I don't look at that
but
as
a negative.
He made
that one play one time.
Yeah, but I don't look at that as a negative.
But that it's the anomaly part.
But
of
that
it.
That play.
If he had five runs of 80 plus yards, then I'd buy into it a lot more. If Ty Montgomery had five plays where he broke a tackle and went off,
no,
you could buy into
get,
him being that lead
five.
Running back.
But that's why I started looking at. Remember, I started looking at like 20-yard carries,
yep.
18-yard carries.
Sure.
I thought that would be important, and it ended up not. Like I thought with C.J. Anderson.
Yeah,
the
but
fact
Anderson
that,
got hurt. I mean, it's hard to say.
But he wasn't playing well. Other than week one, he wasn't really playing.
Sure,
well.
Offensive line change for him too. So you know, going year over year, it's
hard. There's no metric that you, and that's like, There's no metric that you can use to be an absolute perfect determination of what's going to happen.
We talked about this yesterday with Melvin Gordon and even LeGarrette Blount. They averaged under 4 yards a carry. Well, Blount's two-yard carries, you know, where he gets stuffed at the goal line on one of them, that's a detractor. And then his positive is a two-yard carry because he gets in the end zone. He scored 18 touchdowns. You know, I mean, Melvin Gordon scored 10. So
I'm sorry I interrupted you about Lacy.
The one thing that Pete Carroll brought up was people overlooked that Eddie Lacy was running the ball well last year. He just didn't score touchdowns. If you were to just give him his average of the first 3 years of his career, his touchdowns, he was on pick. He hopefully would have reached that, which would be 8. He had a couple big seasons, and he had the 3-touchdown year in 2015. But just in terms of his carries and his yards, he would have been among the league leaders in rushing yards last year had he stayed healthy on the track he was on. So now he goes to Seattle. Clearly there's an offensive line issue there. We talked about this when he signed. But if he's in shape, or at least in Seattle shape, or at least in the shape that he was when he was averaging 5 yards a carry last year when everybody's criticizing him, there's still upside here.
I just want him in shape where he's used. I don't care. I don't know what that shape is. Round.
Well, no, he's got money incentives. It's 240.
It's 55,000 per incentive, though, so he could blow off one of them at some point.
Well, the biggest one is getting in 240s for the season.
Right. And that's all they want him at is 240. Yep. They don't want him to trim down to 230 or 225.
He likes – Pete Carroll made it clear. I want him big.
We talked about this on our video on the site. Pete Carroll had a big back in Marshawn. He had a big back at SC and Lindale White. He's trying to do it again with Eddie Lacy.
Do you feel like if Lacy has a good year, he's going to have to score four more touchdowns inside 5 yards?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's going to be a
big
part
of his game. Oh, my God. He's got to deliver, like, 7 or 8 touchdowns inside of 5 yards.
I think the funny thing is
inside of 10 yards, he's going to – because I don't know how much he's going to be involved in the passing game. And
but he can do it. That's another thing he did prove to his credit.
He can. It's not –
I mean, if he gets 20 catches, are you happy about that?
It's kind of what I expect. I don't think
Lynch's best years were 40. Low 40s, right? His best year, I think, was 41, 42, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know if he's getting there if CJ Pro size
is. No, but that's what I'm saying. I think 20 catches
I think Lacy's got to – but I think Lacy's in a great situation to score a lot of short yardage touchdowns. You're on a good offense, and they like to run the ball near the goal line.
I feel like I got to see – oh, God.
The other thing that Carroll, you know, talked about – the offensive line clearly is an issue for the Seahawks. And he said, we feel like we took our lumps getting these guys ready, that they're going to take the next step this year. And that's something, again, that has to be seen. But, you know, putting them through the Tom Cable system over 16 games, giving them another offseason, hopefully they're together. You know, the addition of Jokel, right?
Yeah.
Luke Jokel at guard. And they're moving Ifedi out to tackle.
So, again, it's ifs. But I think with Eddie Lacy's situation,
I think the argument is good right now. I'm saying no to Eddie Lacy until training camp happens. Well,
you
we'll see.
Spoke to a lot of coaches about a lot of running backs. So in the interest of saving time, look at the Giants, the Carlos Hyde. Let's talk about Hyde, and then we'll talk about the rest of the group, okay? Hyde and Gurley. Hyde and Gurley, you talked to Kyle Shanahan and Sean Oy McVay. And what were your big takeaways for these two guys who are drafted in similar range?
So Shanahan has been an offensive coordinator prior to this year for 9 seasons with 4 different teams. He's had 5,000-yard seasons of those 9. One in Houston with Steve Slayton, 2 in Washington with Alfred Morris, and 2 with Atlanta with Devontae Freeman. He said it's not about can a running back fit in his system. He said if you're a good running back, you fit in any system. So Carlos Hyde's coming off of arguably one of the best systems that we've seen with Chip Kelly. You know, had great success with LeSean McCoy. Not the best with DeMarco Murray, but got back into the conversation of getting good production from his running backs with Hyde, who had 13 games last season and got double digits in fantasy points in standard league in 8 of them. So had the shoulder injury, if you recall, in the middle of the year and then tore his MCL in week 16. So I think Carlos Hyde, you should feel comfortable about it. They added an offensive lineman in Jeremy Zuda in a trade from Baltimore. That'll hopefully help. And they were the 28th or 29th ranked offensive line Pro Football Focus last year. I don't think they're going to be worse. At least that's
not much worse.
Right. So that'll help Carlos Hyde's situation, and I think he's a great value pick in round 2. Clearly, Todd Gurley was a bust. We can say he had some good moments, whatever. He was terrible last year. McVay said it's on the offensive line, it's on Gurley, and it's now on him to make him what he was as a rookie. If you want to buy into that, with the addition of Andrew Whitworth, who's clearly would you say is the best offensive tackle that was on the market? I think that's pretty fair, right?
Yeah, I don't know if I can name another one quickly.
So you add Whitworth. You know, that should help things. Goff, we hope, can be better. And you have, I think, a better play caller in McVay. Now, I haven't gone back to see where what his running situation was the last 2 years, but Kelly was decent, you know, as a rusher. And the year before, I don't think it was very good with Alfred Morris last year there.
No, they struggled. Matt Jones fumbled a lot. And yeah. They struggled. But, yeah, Kelly came on strong at the end of the year, and Kelly is another guy that actually you heard about at the coaches' meeting. I just want to say – the owners' meeting. I want to say one thing about Carlos Hyde. It's a big part of Kyle Shanahan's offense when Atlanta was running backs catching the ball out of the backfield. He actually caught 3 touchdowns last year, and he had 2 games with – he had a 6-for-36 game receiving and a 5-for-30-1 game at Miami. So that was pretty cool.
And the other thing about it is with that team, and specifically, I'm glad you brought it up, they're going to have a fullback on the field a lot because they spent huge money on Kyle Juszczyk, who caught, I believe, 30-plus passes for the Ravens last year. And this goes back to why Baltimore threw the ball so much. Their running backs combined for over 100 catches. So they threw the ball a lot to their backs. So, you know, I'll take that into consideration if you're going to go Dave's route of Mike Wallace and Breshad Perryman. They're going to throw the ball to Woodhead a lot. But Juszczyk was on the field quite a bit. He catches the ball in the backfield. Doesn't necessarily have to be Hyde's on the field. Doesn't have to come off for a third down back, who would be DeJuan Harris in this case. They could still dump it off to Juszczyk or to Hyde.
He's really good, by the way. Juszczyk.
Yep.
Is a really good player.
He better be for what they're paying him.
He was on Jason Lock and Forrest podcast. And he talked about how he just wasn't he asked to get used in a bunch of different ways, and the Ravens never really committed to him other than typical fullback stuff, and then when they had problems with their running game last year, he played a lot of passing downs.
So Giants, Lions, Bucks, Redskins, what stood out there when you look at those running games and you talk to all the coaches?
Jim Caldwell said about Abdullah, I still feel comfortable that he could be a workhorse guy.
And there's the answer to the trivia question I said at the top of the show. Third-year running back, workhorse, it's Amir Abdullah. You probably forgot because it wasn't that memorable.
I remember you not wishing Scott White a happy birthday.
I may have said it during a mic check and not the actual show. I don't know.
Well, you did it now.
Yeah, I did it now.
I dragged Scott in here.
Abdul's going to be interesting. They rebuilt the right side of their offensive line, signed Wagner from Baltimore, TJ Lang from Green Bay. So this was a guy that they wanted to be a 200-carry guy last year. Bob Quinn said that, their GM.
I would have been right.
Huh?
I would have been right.
Look, his first 2 games, the production was
He's the man. Amir Abdullah was awesome.
He averaged over 5 yards a carry in the 2 games combined. Had a 5 catch for some 47 yards and a touchdown in
He's
week
the man.
One. They are going to be one of the teams you want to keep an eye on. I read a few mock drafts from Detroit media people. Have them taking a running back in the round 4, round 5 range. They have 8 picks. So if that's the case, I think Abdullah's safe.
Yeah,
if they draft somebody day 1 or day 2, you got to be a little bit more concerned.
We should go back and look at the teams that drafted a running back day 2 last year.
Rounds 2 and 3 last year?
Yeah, and see what role those running backs played. You going to do that?
Yeah, I can do that for you. The one thing I'll say about the Lions is that I think they're committed to using 2 backs at all times. They're like the opposite of Mike McCarthy in Green Bay. They want to have specialization.
Yeah, McCarthy is weird because most coaches are like, well, you need multiple guys.
Well, every coach will tell you that they need multiple running backs.
Some
will say, I need one guy who can play 3 downs, can do everything that I ask, won't tip off what we're doing to the defense. And some guys will say, I don't mind tipping it off to the defense. I want one guy that can do X and another guy that can do Y.
Well, I mean, New England's the perfect scenario of that because they had Blunt was, I think, 299 carries last year.
Wow.
And James White had 60-plus catches. So you factor in what the other guys did with Lewis, you know, mixing in and you know, that's like the perfect storm. If you're getting 250 carries from one guy and still have a specialist that can be 50-plus catches.
See, I always seem to draft Abdullah in our mocks, and I think I would take him over Paul Perkins.
I would, too.
But
I'm not excited about
that guy. I feel like he goes 2 rounds after Paul Perkins.
Well, I think the hope is that you can see, because I think most people feel like Dave, where you kind of see Theo Riddick in his role and Abdullah. I think you were surprised when you asked how many games has he played. You know, I think people have the perception that he's injury prone.
18 games?
He's played 18 seasons? Of 32.
He played 16 games.
He's definitely injury prone.
You're going back to his college days?
He's not injury prone in the NFL?
And the NFL.
Well, I mean, just in terms of games played, he had a missed season
but
because
I think,
of one injury.
Right. And then the other season he played every game, but –
I think he played through a shoulder injury.
He played through a shoulder injury. Yeah. And didn't he get hurt in the preseason or training?
I don't know.
Well, he had the big preseason.
He tore it up in the preseason.
I know, and then I think he got banged up after that. You wanted to know about running backs in rounds 2 and 3?
Yeah.
Well, last year was a bad year to do this with because there were only three.
It was. I think you want to go the next.
Right. Like, I'll go Perkins the year and... before, but yeah. Derek...
No, because I know if a guy gets drafted in rounds 4 through 8 or 4 through 7, I'm
anything
not
could happen.
Really going to. Like,
well, but
whatever.
Jordan Howard was one of those guys who was drafted in rounds 4 through 7, and he turned out to be great.
He turned out to be great, but he did not get the first crack at it.
No.
Not by a long shot.
No. So, well, neither did any of these guys. Okay. Derrick Henry in round 2, the only running back taken in round 2 last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Kenyon Drake, 73rd overall. C.J. Procise, 90th overall.
Yeah, I think it's overrated when running backs get drafted. What about the year before? You want to take a look at the year before, rounds 2 and 3?
Yeah, give me a second.
Because we know if a guy gets drafted in round 1, he's a threat to the incumbent. We know if a guy gets drafted in rounds 4 through 7, he might be.
All right.
But it's not a guarantee.
So round 2, T.J. Yeldon, 36th overall. Amir Abdullah, 54th overall. I believe those are the only two from round 2 in 2015.
David Johnson was round 3.
David Johnson was round 3. So was Matt Jones. So was two more guys. Duke Johnson.
Wasn't Tevin Coleman there
and
too?
Tevin Coleman.
So how many
David
of them...
David Johnson went behind Tevin Coleman and
how
Duke
many
Johnson.
Of them unseated the starter without the starter getting the first try? Like... Because
how many of them were initiated
Yeldon,
as a starter
maybe?
At the beginning
I don't
of the
remember
year?
Yeldon's
no,
situation as a rookie.
I don't believe he was. I don't think.
No,
he
that
was
Toby Gerhardt.
I think
it?
Toby was still there, and they had to justify his salary by putting him in the starting role. Abdullah.
Abdullah, I think, is
he
the best.
Might have, he might have been.
Well,
the,
remember,
the
Coleman
first
and Freeman were competing with each other for the starting job,
and then,
he had the hamstring injury.
Right, right.
Coleman, I think, won it, right? And then he got hurt.
He got hurt in the Giants game.
And then Freeman took it over. So it's interesting. Don't assume that if a running back is taken in the second or third round, he's going to be the starter. I think it's kind of what I want to say.
No, but you're going to hear some names that fall that people will fall in love with.
And this is a deep running back draft,
like,
too. There's
going to
be names
to
for
go
sure.
back to what we talked about yesterday. If the off-field things with Dalvin Cook push him into round 2, he's going to go to a team where people are still going to think of him as the starter
he's
the right scenario.
Case.
Or McCaffrey. If McCaffrey gets out of the first round.
All right, let's finish the show here, fantasyfootball at CBSi.com.
I think just real quick,
emails.
One thing on Paul Perkins. He kind of alluded to this where we talked about this yesterday. There's a few teams that threw out the name Adrian Peterson. The Lions were one. Bob Quinn, the general manager, said it. And Ben McAdoo was asked about Peterson because he's been linked to the Giants since he initiated it in January. And then after Rashad Jennings was released, he had the tweet, interesting moves. So McAdoo was asked about Peterson, and he said, never say never in terms of them being interested. Apparently that's a phrase he throws around a lot when – he's trying to be vague, but
which is always
he's
always so vague.
But there, they made a move to bring in a veteran receiver. There's a hole, essentially. Paul Perkins may be great, he may be terrible. He didn't show a lot to say it's his job right away. And what did they do? They bring in essentially more backups around him. Shane Vereen's not a starter.
I don't know that we should eliminate Shane Vereen from the discussion yet.
Yes, as a full time guy.
As a guy I want on my fantasy team,
as a guy who's going to get enough carries to ruin Paul Perkins' value.
Oh yeah, in that instance, you can't ruin.
Like
him
I could see them being 1A, 1B.
Never a good sign when they tell you to take a pay cut.
With Vereen?
Yeah.
No, it's not a good sign. Okay,
he's had a hard time staying healthy.
I agree. I mean, it's not like we're drafting him, but like you said, it's not like Perkins proved much, although I do think he's going to be a solid player.
I agree. I like to see them add to their offensive line, though.
They like Fluker.
I really want them to take somebody else.
Jesse from Walla Walla. I am a commissioner of Work League. Small buy-in. One member left the company near the end of the season, but he won second place. He did not claim his prize winnings. I considered using the winnings to purchase a traveling work trophy. One member who placed fourth said I should just move everyone up one position, making him third and in the money. I feel he earned fourth and shouldn't get a better position because someone didn't claim their prize.
Good for you.
But I could use the prize to benefit the whole league. What do you suggest?
Well, you can't find the guy? He moved to where?
I guess he just doesn't care. Or they don't care enough to reach out to him.
If the small buy-in is $10. I mean, he's talking about buying a trophy with the money, not going to Aruba. So it's probably not that
much
money.
So
and the guy might have left the job.
Let's just say come next football season. That guy's like, oh, wait a minute, I finished
Second, yeah, shouldn't I get $30? Because it's probably like $30 and he doesn't care.
Look, let's just assume he didn't care enough to want. He left on really bad terms and doesn't want to talk to
anyone. Like what happened exactly?
I shouldn't say anything.
Well, then I'll say it. He brought his pet snake into the office and it ran wild everywhere.
It doesn't bite.
Crapped on the boss's carpet.
Really, really scared.
No one got bit.
The snake ran?
Well, you know, slithered.
Slithered. Just checking. All right, what do you
sorry,
do?
Sorry, Peter Pan, flying through the air.
Do you give fourth place the money?
Here's what you do. You take whatever money that was left over and you put it in the pot for next year.
Okay, that makes
or
sense.
And now the prizes are even better. You have a draft party. You buy McDonald's for everybody. Okay. Buy Blue Apron for everybody.
Jim from Chicago suburbs. Any place in particular, Dave?
Flossmore.
Dear Sean, Paul.
What about Brushmore?
Nah.
This one I didn't even put in. Dear Sean, Paul, Shane, and Orleans.
I know that one.
I do too. Giants running backs. Who has more upside this year, Paul Perkins or Kenneth Dixon?
I'm a Dixon guy, and even I know that Perkins at this point has more upside.
Because of the suspension?
Yeah, I mean.
Dixon suspended four games.
Danny Woodhead is 100% going to be that passing downs guy and is only going to creep into the running downs role if he continues to play he can.
Or he's 32 coming off of a torn ACL.
Well, sure. So it could go that way too. So if he does get hurt, but he's never been hurt 2 years in a row.
He's also never been coming off a torn ACL.
And he just signed a large contract.
I kind of feel like Dixon might have more upside.
I love the value of Kenneth Dixon.
That's one of my favorite
guys to take with.
So this could be the Eisenberg strategy where you take a mid-round running back and then later on you get another running back.
Yes.
And it's called the strategy that everybody uses because everybody collects running backs. You can get both of these guys.
The suspension was good for Dixon's
value. Because Terrence West isn't anything.
I'm not sure if it's ever good when Terrence West has a four-game audition. If he does even halfway decent,
he had that audition last year too.
He's not going away though. If he does anything good,
same situation last year.
What round is it for Kenneth Dixon?
Oh, 8.
But
nine,
wait, you say the same. But they didn't. They were unwilling to give Kenneth Dixon the workload. That was the most frustrating thing. Every week we didn't know
not
if it was going to be
end
West
of the year
or
did he start
the end of the year
more.
He started to.
I mean, I feel like it was still frustrating.
This is also a team that could add another
him and
running back.
Oh, without a doubt, him and Perkins were almost identical.
Yep. In what regard?
They didn't get any.
You knew that they were getting a bigger role
till the end of the
year, and they didn't really come through in the huge way you were hoping for.
Okay,
and we were screaming for both of them to get a huge role.
Well, yeah.
Now the difference is that Dixon's competition, because of Woodhead. And West is somebody that they kind of view similarly. I don't think the talent is similar, but they view them similarly. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Giants view Paul Perkins on the same level as Orleans Darkwa and who's the guy they brought in from San Francisco?
Sean Drone.
They don't view those guys the same. They view Perkins better than those guys, but they need to add somebody else potentially to help the situation.
Other than a couple of games, week 14 at New England and week 17 at Cincinnati, Terrence West had 10 to 13 carries in four of his last six games. And during that stretch, Dixon was getting about 10 carries a game, but he didn't have the two games where he got, 2 and 5. So he got more carries, but it was too even of a split. It was very frustrating. It was like, dude, just stop with Terrence West. Like, what are you doing here? But they were in the playoff race, so, I guess they knew what they were doing. All right, that's it. Have a great weekend.
Happy April Fool's Day.
Oh, yeah. It's my favorite gag every year is on the baseball podcast. I will announce that somebody is out for like the year or 3 months with a knee injury or something, and then I'll say it's April Fool's.
How do you say it?
I'm like, all right, big news. We're going to start with this. Bryce Harper, sprained MCL. He's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks. What do you guys think about this? And then I'll be like, April Fool's! And I'll inevitably get a few people like, you got me, you little jokester. But I guess 2 years in a row, I won't be able to do that now. What a shame.
Yeah, it's really horrible.
I did it last year.
Why didn't you just do it today
this year and next
for
year?
People who listen on Saturday?
No, it's not the same. Remember when somebody sent me the Die Hard email? Like they were going to make a new Die Hard or something?
No, somebody got you with it?
Got me so bad. And you were the one who pointed it out. You were like, what's today's date, Adam? And I was like, oh my God.
No, I don't remember.
So stupid.
That was a while ago.
4 years ago, yeah. I'd say. Yeah.
So before the last Die Hard movie?
I think it might have been after that dreadful Russia movie they were going to like remake. I think they were going to do a remake. That was it. They were going to do a remake of the original Die Hard.
So another Christmas.
And Bruce Willis is going to be the villain. It was something crazy like that. And I was like, oh my, no way. Terrible. All right, bye.
Bye.